Interview with Lee Withy, February 14, 2001. We're located at 512 Herning Road, off Tina Hot Springs Road. Participants are Lee Withy, Al, and Bruce George.
Here's McQuinn.
Mm-hmm.
Here's McQuinn over here, and
mm-hmm.
and Sheard was this little dinky thing up here.
Right.
He had that little. He had the that V2 with a winch on it, and he used to drag logs.
Hmm.
He used to drag logs down to the Chena River, and they floated them down They floated them down to town.
Huh. And that was Adolph Shearer.
Adolph Shearer, yeah.
So that would be clear down to what, the little Chena?
No, they went to the big Chena somewhere.
Yeah, some down here.
I don't know how they got down there, but. Fassler told me about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here they got Fassler, but
oh yeah, Fassler. Frank Fassler. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Frank Fassler, and she, and then Ackerman was here, and that's about where the road quit.
Yeah,
right here by Ackerman.
Yeah. See, they show it up here.
Oh,
at that time.
Well, that was still. That was proposed at that time.
Oh,
see, and they did this by. They brought that around. See,
here's Henry Bachman. Henry here would be Nordale now. Here's
yeah.
Scherer.
And then they brought the road down. They brought the road down into here. And then and this Bernard O'Leary. The only reason he homesteaded is that because there was a lot of wood on there, and he sold firewood.
Oh, okay.
That was, and he also bought firewood from me a couple of times. I cut the wood. I cut the wood, and then he did pay more than Lindstrom, and he didn't care. He didn't care if was he.
Yeah, it's going. Okay. He's looking to see whether you.
Oh, you're recording this already.
Yeah, we got this.
Well, anyway. Anyway, and Kalina never got his 160.
Oh, so that isn't correct.
This isn't correct because now here was Kalina, and he was one of. Now I don't know exactly how that was divided, but they went up and measured his clearing, and he didn't quite get enough clearing. And whoever from the BLM who did the measuring didn't give any sympathy for the fact that he was almost blind.
Right.
But anyway, he never did get the whole thing. Now I don't know exactly what the thing actually
was.
What I remember of the rule of thumb that they used was you had to clear 10% of what you were claiming. Is that?
Well, it was. I did it by. They call it commutation or something, you know, it was a deal at commuting or something, and I paid $1.25 and I only had to do the 10 acres for the 160. I didn't have to do the 100 and I didn't have to do 20 acres.
Oh, you weren't a veteran at that time, were you?
I was.
Well, you were.
But that didn't cut no ice.
Didn't?
No, that didn't mean anything at that time. It didn't,
the only time it meant anything at that time was how much time you had to be on it to say that you occupied it.
Oh, okay. It didn't affect the amount of clearing.
Well, my biggest concern was they were out hunting gun sight properties at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they took a gun sight away over there by, you know, where Henry's living at now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That gun sight place there. And they went out by Dornath.
Yeah.
They had a gun sight out at Dornath.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then after they decided they didn't need that gun sight, they gave it back to Dornath.
Hmm.
And that gun sight that was out there by Henry's, I don't know.
It's right. I have. Well, there's a field, but that isn't it. There's another one. Where? Okay, here's Les Loud. Okay, here.
I think it'd be right here. See, here's John Holmes' place, where Henry is now.
Yeah, okay.
And so it should be that piece right there, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, they were up there. They went up, and they also looked off of Amanita. Mm-hmm. They looked off of Amanita, but they didn't pick that. But they were looking over right on the top of the property of mine there.
Yeah.
Because Kalina's, up there at Kalina's is the 1,100-foot elevation.
Hmm.
The highest point is right up kind of behind his house.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I didn't have proved up on it, they could arbitrarily take it and give me some other piece of ground somewhere else, which I wasn't excited about. So I hot put it down and decided to pay the $1.25 an acre for my 160, and I gave the United States government $200, and I got the original title at that time. And so, but anyway, the Kivalin was in this area, you know, here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, in fact, it shows him with two pieces.
Well,
because he was down below here, also.
Yeah.
This is where the house was.
Yeah, but I don't remember exactly. But Henry, I think, finally just bought that. This
after Kivalin's left.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't know for sure if there was two Kivalins. See, this is Charles C. Kivalin.
Yeah,
and,
you're right. The other's just
you know,
Charles.
And that I don't know, but Henry would be able to tell you that.
Oh yeah, we've got to talk to Henry yet.
And I, Farkas is. Farkas had this piece of ground there next to Loud.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the road runs through there on a slant, it you know, it's kind of a pie, you know, it's a kind of an oddball piece
right.
of ground in there. And Loud's is a little bit cockeyed like that too, you know, that goes there and then it straightens out.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time it was going to just come whipping right straight out here and go out this way and go on to here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Everhart and all them guys thought the road was going to come up there, and it never, that didn't go that way. So,
in fact, they were then hoping that it would come through.
Well,
close to.
You know, it would have been, he's real close to the line in there. If you come down the road, you can see.
Oh, yeah.
And
you're
looking
right at his
down at Carl's. If you, I think the corners, you know, the corners touch your see Carl.
Oh, yeah, here he is.
Well,
here's Carl's.
Yeah,
here's
Carl's. Oh yeah. Well. George Miles went up like this, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, well, I didn't, you know, if when you look on the thing, it didn't look as though they went down that far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't look as though, Walt Everhart's was down as far as Herning's was.
Right. Oh, yeah,
but,
he's down beyond.
And Don was, and Kruger had the greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a greenhouse sitting right about where that K is there
mm-hmm.
on the map. And he bought that from, he bought the boiler from Independent Lumber or somebody.
Right.
And he built this greenhouse and the first tomato plants I bought from him, and he jerked them out of the ground and wrapped them up in newspaper and gave them to me. And I had never seen anything like that. And even Charlie Shrewsbury and them other guys all had them in the, Shrewsbury had them in beer cans. He started them in beer cans. So we did some tomatoes in beer cans too. And I picked up all the beer cans from the club car. Right
yeah.
there on the Cease Highway.
Yeah, what was that called anyway?
It was the club car.
Oh. Okay.
And
it was an old train
railroad car.
Car, yeah.
Yeah, and it was sitting, and they then afterwards they built that, you know, big elaborate club car. But a guy by the name of Gunny owned it.
Yeah.
I think that's who it was. Oh, Matt.
He lived up on Gilmar Trail.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Gunning must have been the other half there.
Yeah, well, he had a full homestead up there, at least 80 acres, right up there where the pipeline went through.
Mm-hmm.
And he donated that. He and his wife both died, and they
should be in that area someplace.
Well,
if
know,
they owned it at that time.
He went past Rachel Zook's place to
mm-hmm.
get there.
Oh, that's right. I remember
he
Rachel
tried to
now.
Get a little bit of money out of her for plowing because and she wouldn't have
well,
any part of it.
Should be. Well, Rachel should have been rest. Off where the road curved there, I thought.
Well, you know that.
Did you notice Dick's shoe?
Yeah, I see that. I never knew that he had applied for any, because I don't think that he was ever that excited about working that hard. You know, I mean that homestead thing. I think that was kind of a that was. He was really a good at those old radio tubes and
mm-hmm.
and that type of thing.
Yeah.
So I believe
this was before he got burned, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, when he got burned that time, he never quite recovered from that.
Right.
That was terrible that time.
Traumatic. Somebody was talking about a Mr. Betcher.
I didn't remember him. All I heard about was that he had a little right there when you come down the hill from Severance there. He had a strawberry patch out there and a raspberry patch and I guess he was he was one of these guys that just tried to exist off of the land, and I don't know what Walt Eberhard would know what Betcher did. I heard him talking about going down to Betcher's and looking at the looking at his place there, and you know it at that time that was out in the swamp.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean it was. It's a little bit. There's a little hole in there. There's a couple people living in there.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much permafrost there is in there, but...
Well, somebody said that he had, I think it was Don, that he brought in shrubs and stuff like that and some Siberian wheat that he was trying to grow and gave Carl some.
Well, you know, Carl grew some stuff too, but in 1953 was the first time I met Carl Herney.
Mm-hmm.
And he had potatoes on his place up there. And I came up and I helped my sister and her husband get a house under roof. And they only had X number of dollars, and then we expended all of their money that they had at the time. And I still had a couple more days vacation time coming, and I went out and everybody wanted somebody to help pick up potatoes.
Right.
So Howard Arndt, who was in the service, he took 26 days off when we were doing this house, and then we went out and picked up potatoes. Well, Carl had had two young guys there that were hauling them in as we were picking them up. Well, at 5 o'clock, these guys went home, and Carl had potatoes out on the field, and they shinnied around the corner, and Carl says, "Where are the Tillman boys?" I said, "Well, they left at 5 o'clock, or thereabouts." And somebody said, "Yeah." He said, "All I saw was the taillights as they were leaving." Well, then, so we were out there in the dark trying to pick up potatoes in the, you know, with the potato vines everywhere and the two-wheel drive pickup. And if you don't think that was somebody holding the flashlight trying to find where the bags were. And, you know, we fumbled around out there in the dark. Harold came over afterwards yet. And we went out and we got all of them in. We looked in the morning. That was the first thing I did when I went over in the morning to see if we'd left one somewhere, because it was freezing that night. So then Carl was driving bus already. So He dug a couple of rows before he went on the bus route. And Carl was a fussy guy about who drove his equipment and how to do whatever. And you know, it was really funny. Arndt, the young soldier, he grew up on a farm in Wisconsin, and he ran more machinery than Carl ever saw. So he went out, we picked up those potatoes, and then he went out and dug four more rows. And Carl come back and he said, "Who drove my tractor?" And he said, "Well, we were out of potatoes." So we picked 170 bags of potatoes that day. And those two kids came out there, you know, they came in the morning, and we helped them load them so that that we weren't out there fumbling around. But we got paid. We put 90 pounds in a bag. That's what he wanted, and that you could still kind of get a hold on the bag. But that was about all. John Holmes and all those other guys, they only put one of those big baskets in each bag, and that way, whoever was doing it, their kids or Edith or John, they all could lift them. One basket in a bag.
Mentioning equipment, when did George and who, Harold?
Harold.
Were involved in, they had a dealership?
They had the Oliver dealership there. They had the Oliver dealership there, right there where the where that Radio Shack is.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lundgren Construction got into that building, and Harold went out. I don't know exactly. Harold sold Stubbins a piece of equipment.
We had it when we came with the place.
You had a loader on it, a bucket, mm-hmm. huh? Mm-hmm. But you didn't have no blade for it.
Yeah, we had a blade too, didn't we, Al?
What?
Didn't we have a blade as well as the bucket for the little Oliver?
Yeah. Yeah, but the bucket that we had was the narrow bucket. It
wasn't as wide as the tracks.
It didn't go out beyond the edge of the tracks.
Oh.
So you always were fighting that.
Oh, the crooked business, right. Yeah. Well, they made the bucket big enough. It was bigger than the guy over at Mitchell Truck and Tractor said. Well, he said it's better than a number two, but not much. Don had a piece of equipment too, you know, and Frank Fassler bought one, and that thing only had three rollers on the bottom, and if you got on uneven ground, they would walk off the track would just walk off, and it would be on the side, and for about a half a day you would be out there jacking and trying to put it back on. And Charlie Ward bought one of the first John Deere's that John Deere made. And Charlie Ward went down, NC was selling them, and Charlie Ward was promoting the John Deere thing at the time. And the first ones the first one that they made, you know, one of the first ones they made. Well, then Yukon Equipment was handling a thing called TerraTrak, and that was the forerunner to the Case Company making a crawler tractor. Mm-hmm. Well, the John Deere had individual clutches for each side on the track, so you could theoretically turn this thing, stop the ones, disengage the clutch, and if you pull the lever back, you pull the brake, and then that would stop that thing completely, and then you could turn it. Well, the TerraTrak had a planetary gear in it, and all it had was a brake, and you would brake on the one side, and then the other would gradually turn, and it just depended upon how tight you pull that brake, mm-hmm. how fast it would turn, but it just wouldn't it wasn't as neat, you know, it wasn't, the John Deere was in the business longer on this crawler stuff, you know, and so they had learned a lot of improvements by the time they got it, and so then they also sold bigger tractors, and Carl Herning at one time bought a combine from somebody, and he had a combine, and Don had planted some grain on his acreage over there, and it looked beautiful. And I, when I was clearing, when I was doing my proving up on putting in the crop, Walt Everhart had access to a grain drill from somewhere. Now, I don't know whose grain drill it was, if it was Charlie Ward's or what, but we planted.
I remember asking.
We planted barley over at my place because that was the only kind of grain that anybody had around here at the time. And that Lynn Funk got the barley off of the place, and it made over 70 bushel to the acre at that time, which was kind of an unheard of thing. Mm-hmm. I was just happy to see somebody utilize it, because right after I harvested that crop, I was able to get them to come and look and make sure we had done our, and when they came to my place, they looked out the window. I went to the Soil Conservation Service, and we went out and took a wheel and measured all these pieces of ground to make sure I had it. And when the BLM came out there, they looked out the window and it says, "Looks like there's enough there," and they signed it off and went home.
Listen, I'm confused about something. You're proving up, but Berkey's name is on this.
Well, the reason Berkey filed on it,
mm-hmm.
and then he. This thing was done in 1953. Okay. Yeah. I didn't go out there until 1954.
Okay.
Berkey went down, released it. He went in and signed it off, and I went in and filed on it. So that's the reason why
never really owned it.
No, he didn't own it. But what he did, he and I agreed that he had done put the road in, mm-hmm. and we had a notebook out, and we made up an agreement that I would pay for some of the improvements that he had made.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, he couldn't sell that stuff
to
me because it wasn't his. But he was on blind faith that I would pay him, and that was the big deal. We got a notebook out, and we scribbled out something, and it said I had to pay him $75 a month until it was paid, and we were able to pay him $75 a month, and it seemed like it was taking a long time to get, I mean, $75, and I was making the big $150 a month. And then Greta went in and tried to get a job. And she got this little Mickey Mouse job of half a day or something, a couple of days a week or something. So I was trying to figure out a way that she could stay home instead of trying to make two people driving in on the old grubby road. And it was costing more than what we could possibly make. And so I hit up old Hildy for a raise. And I went down to Johnny Albright because Johnny Albright was hiring people. And he paid $600 a month, and then he also would buy a pickup at his cost, and he ducked $100 a month or something until it was paid for. But you had to have Samson Plumbing and Heating on the doors,
mm-hmm.
on both doors, you know. So, and I went on and I thought, well, if maybe I'll get a job, you know. And so then. When I went back and I told Hilly that, I said, I might as well tell you that I did put in an application, you know, and she said, well, how much do they pay there, you know? And I said, well, they pay you $600 a month, and then the fringe benefits are they they buy you a pickup, and you have to pay for it at his fleet cost. And at that time, a pickup was about $1,200 and some delivered in Fairbanks. So in one year, you would have it paid off, and I would have a new rig, you know. So she decided that she would pay me $612.50. So, well, then, you know, it was the vacation time at the university was unreal, you know, because you got 30 working days. Because anybody that went on vacation, if they drove out, they couldn't make it any other way, you know. And so, anyhow, that's where that ended up at. And so I worked there for a while. Well, then they had a big a big problem with getting some funding, you know, one time, and yeah. And they had to lay off some people, and I was looking, you know, somewhere at the same time, you know. I thought, well, you know, it could be me, it could be anybody, you know, at the time. So then the university needed an expediter, so I worked over there at the university as expediter for a while. Well, that wasn't much different than what I did over the other place, and I knew all the places downtown, and so I thought, right, that's how that turned out. So, and I can tell you about...
Yeah, what about Bonnet?
Bonnet, he worked for the airline, and...
Pan Am, or...?
Yeah, I think he was the only one that was really functioning up here at the time. And he moved out of here, and we looked at his house over there, you know, where Rudy's at.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, that was his?
That was his house. So it's
interesting, because where does the present road go then?
Well,
because
see, the road went on by there straight, and
yeah,
the road was straight,
and then it swoops.
It's curved out after.
Yeah, see, here's Bob Strait,
yeah.
And it now goes through his pretty much where the old sled road.
Well, I don't really know for sure how that some of these here were I don't think they were really close.
Could be.
They weren't.
Yeah,
I don't believe that they some of those were
okay.
Right on the. I don't think some
yeah.
of them were not. But that.
So Rudy was on.
Rudy.
On this property. Oh, this must be part of it.
Part
too,
of it. Yeah.
It? Yeah. Okay.
See, there's 40, 40,
mm-hmm.
40, 40.
Right.
And see, it's down in there. And
mm-hmm.
We looked at that, but in the meantime, we heard about Murphy's place.
Right.
And see the. The road actually goes in here 900 feet from the section line.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Golden Valley went in through
yeah.
there. So that road isn't on either, because...
Would that be on what Alice Road is now?
No. This is Alice Road here.
Oh, it is, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, between
and
the
two. And the reason Earl... No, right here.
No,
wait a minute.
Here you are.
Yeah, well, let's see. Something's wrong here. Yeah, Earl Herning's in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
Go ahead, Mark.
Alice Road is right. Here's Alice
okay,
Road.
Okay, between
here.
These two properties.
Yeah, it's right here. Alice Road, you can see the. And when Berkey used to be in here, he had to go past Earl's. Earl's house is right, was
mm-hmm.
right here. Well, he had to go up this hill, and that's a really steep hill.
Right.
So he ran over one of their dogs one night, and then.
One of Earl's dogs?
Yeah. And they were pretty important dogs over there. They were in show dogs, and they went and got manicured, and
mm-hmm.
you know, Mrs. Herning was big on, you know, grooming and showing their
yeah.
their dogs, and they were well kept. Well, anyway, then it was a lot easier for him to put that road in, you know, because that way that wasn't such a steep. Climb into
well,
there.
And this got him away from running over
the
dogs.
Dogs.
That was the idea.
That was the
okay.
big. I think the dog. That's what Berkey said. He said, "Yeah." He said that dog was was the determining thing. Prior to that, the noise of him didn't bother, because he used to drive a Jeep. He used to drive a Jeep that didn't have a muffler on, and he would work all hours of the day and night. He was a heavy-duty mechanic.
Huh.
And if he got off of the airplane, he would be working somewhere. Boris Knutson was over there, and Burgess and whoever were trying to get this guy, because he was one of the heavy-duty mechanics that knew more about mechanics than anybody else. And the fact that his wife they had twins. I think they had four kids in 4 years. And so she would rather have been in town when they're working at this, working, and he was working out at Eielson or something.
Mm-hmm.
And when he had to go into the BLM to relinquish that thing, he lost 3 hours of overtime because he was working. He was there 16 in Java. They were pumping it, and somehow or another they were able to pump the gravel. And his job was to change the pipes ever so often, so that when the gravel went running through there, that it would wear the pipes out on the bottom, and he would have to turn those pipes a quarter turn when they started leaking. And so, and they pumped several million yards of gravel.
Is that out of Latina?
No, it was out at Eielson.
Oh.
Out there right near the base.
Huh.
And they were baling the gravel for that big hangar that's out there.
Uh-huh.
That was supposed to be built in 1953.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened, all the trades went on strike. The carpenters were getting $3.75 an hour, and they wanted $4. And the plumbers were getting $4, and they wanted $4.25. The electricians were getting $4.50, and they wanted $4.75. And I don't know, the laborers were getting $3.50, and they wanted $3.75. And everybody went fishing in 1953. The painters were getting $4, and they wanted $4.50. Nobody gave on it. And so, the guys that were doing the pumping the gravel were doing that because they made an agreement whatever the wages were going to be, they just wanted the guy working. They didn't care about the 25 cents. But it was so funny, you know, that they were all trying to get 25 cents an hour. So that was him. And then, and I don't ever remember whoever this. I never saw that person.
Right.
And McQuinn was a painter, actually, and he did this homestead thing, you know. He was going to do something there, but he's on a hill that's just unreal there, and it's you know, and see now, I don't know.
Well, now did Days buy from McQuinn or Bonet, or because they Jim Day was in there someplace.
I think it was.
Oh, yeah, because the road now goes down there.
Yeah, it used to go up here.
Mm-hmm.
It used to go up here and then made a real sharp bend here somewhere. It went on. But this road is a little screwed up.
No, I don't doubt that.
No, this year was they went around the curve here and then went over.
Yeah.
And they'd come down here somewhere. I don't know exactly where they made the. Because they couldn't go over the top of this hill.
That's right. Where did the road go in relation to Ackerman?
It was right here, down here. And in other words, he thought the road was going up there too at one time,
sure.
But that didn't ever happen. The power line went there.
Yeah, we
the
didn't
power
see
line
it.
Went that way. But he had a root cellar down right down here, and then he changed. He made a new one.
John Cole was
Johnny
he?
Cole. Johnny Cole. Johnny Cole got. I I'm not sure exactly where John Cole Road is. It's Johnny Cole bought from somebody, but I think...
Well, where the road is not where they used to live, though, is it? Because the road
There was this hippie hill up there somewhere,
mm-hmm,
I was only up that road once in that right. in the whole time I was out there, so I don't know.
It's not important.
I don't know. Yeah. And then Harold had this piece of ground here, but he also bought a piece of ground someone else had at one time in
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I know Harold bought and sold.
The guy at the Steese Market owned this at one time.
Shepherd Hill
owned a piece of ground here, mm-hmm. and then he got Carl bought it mm-hmm. from Shepherd Hill, and then Harold got it from Carl. So you'd have to talk, Walt Everhard would know more about this.
Yeah, well, we'll talk to him.
Because then Bilberg was down in here, and he had a little cabin down there, and then he sold the Severance.
Well, yeah, this 80 over here, the Severance had an 80. On Nordale Road, that when it went in later, except for this little corner here, apparently.
I don't know what is it?
Looks like S-E-L-S-C-H-A-R-T, sales chart, or maybe that's an I. Can't tell.
I don't know. That one didn't. And see, back here, Pete Aiken had the homestead
right.
here. And then that Love homestead was up in here.
On either side of Steel Creek.
And then Yoder had this place in here. Went past the Maranatha Children's
yeah,
Home.
Yeah, well, Maranatha's up here, but the other Pentecostal
yeah. Children's Home. And I think the Pentecostal Children's Home bought this here from Love or somebody. Because
mm-hmm.
they own a piece of ground in there. Or it could have been on this Davis thing.
Yeah, hard to know.
So that one, I never knew this Davis. And then that old guy had a little piece of ground.
Harry Denton?
Yeah. He was right there by the Steel Creek.
Yeah, talk about a swamp.
yeah. Well, he kept going after the state. He was after the state because they when they took their line down there, they were 3 feet over center line on his,
the road?
On his property.
Oh, yeah.
For a long time, he was arguing about 3 feet. Well, then they came along and took 200.
How long did he last down there, anyway?
I don't know. He was there a long time, and then he finally, you know, when they were messing with the road there in 1963, when they were doing paving, I believe. I don't know that they got it paved in 63 because
no.
they were digging on it. And
but they had
I remember when a lot of people were not driving through there real
mm-hmm.
good. Well, anyway, he finally loaded up everything he owned in his truck, and he went down the highway, and he went off the road in Canada somewhere, and he lost his truck and all his belongings, and the only thing he came out of there with was his dog. And then the Canadian government didn't want him leaving his truck there. So I never really heard Carl knew of him, you know, more than anybody. He did associate with Carl from time to time. And once in a while he got a ride into town with Carl and Frank Fassler would ride into town with me once in a while. And I like to go over to Frank Fassler because when you went over to his place, he always would, he would give you a cup of coffee, and he always washed out the cup, even if it was in the cabinet clean. And that was better than I could do at Lindstrand, Carl Lindstrand. I don't think I ever got any coffee there, but McQuinn, the cats and the stuff were all licking this stuff out on the. He said, "Well, they're pretty clean, you know. Let me see." I said, "You know, when I'm driving the tractor out in the cold, I said I don't want to drink much coffee because it's hard to get off." So I didn't like the cups, but he was, you know, he was a good-hearted guy. Then when you go back into on Amanita.
Okay, well, Amanita is over here.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
Here's that one.
And and then Jim Day homesteaded a piece of ground in here. Him and that Johnny Cole went and cut the firewood off of it.
Uh-huh.
And then they decided that they didn't want it back in there. That road was, you know, it was too much of a hassle going in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And this one here, I don't ever remember back in there. And some of this property got sold. Rydell, she homesteaded a long time ago.
Yeah, apparently around the same time that Don did.
I think it was pretty much at that time. And then and she had a road, you know, Don. She went up, I think, on Don's road.
Don gave her a right
in easement. Well, see, at one time, most of the time they were only on the section line.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Don had it on both sides of the section line, and so they had a 33-foot easement that people got. So they had 16, one rod or whatever that is. I think a rod 16 and a half foot, and that was how that 33-foot came about. And these people in this year, I hadn't any clue about those. And then that Maranatha Children's Home deal, that I only saw a few people there. I never.
According to Don, Funk homesteaded that.
Yeah, Funk did.
So then, did he sell it then to Maranatha?
Maranatha. And then Funk went ahead and bought land down in the swamp.
Yeah, okay. It must have been Lundquist. See, next to Carl, there's Carl and Walt.
I don't know. He went all the way back in there, and it was, he got more than that straight shot in there, I believe. Yeah,
okay.
I think he even went down, down toward that creek. I don't really know. I was down there one time, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, how glad I am to be on the hill. I might have a little problem getting in, but I... And not all the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, he went in there, and he had a whole bunch of cows in there.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. and the water was so bad in there that everything was brown. Everything was brown. The cans on the outside were brown.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and all these guys were out here trying to get this agriculture thing going.
Right.
And he... he had cows, and the guy on the Steese Highway there, Bushy had cows.
Bushy's
and Horace Drury.
Right.
Horace Drury, he had like 320 acres back in the back off of Freeman there.
Mm-hmm.
He's still up there.
Yeah. We went out there one time. I saw this place. And he had a chopper for chopping, you know, for
silage.
Hay silage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they delivered their milk down to Matanuska at the creamery. And then there was the guy over on Chena Pump Road that had the cows, that he had them in those railroad cars. They had railroad cars down there on China Pump Road
right.
One time. I can't think of the guy's name. You know, and he had more milk. He had more milk than some of the other ones. Well, then Cadbury had a farm out here off of Badger Road, Cadbury, and they all brought the milk to the Matanuska Creamery.
Oh, yeah.
To the co-op. See, the co-op built that creamery here primarily to sell recombined milk to the military.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had the refrigeration and everything up here, so they made ice cream. And they made ice cream out of butterfat and powdered milk and stabilizer, and the ice cream was good quality, and they sold a lot of it, and Carnation came in and tried to, you know, they Carnation made a deal with Art Sixar was the distributor for Carnation, and he was a real good friend of one of the pilots for Pan American, and they got a little preferential treatment hauling milk, and they hauled milk up here for 8 cents a pound on the airlines. They would bring up 15,000 to 20,000 pounds a night, because they were coming up here with a 747, and they'd park their milk trucks out there, and they'd offload it and put it in the trucks, and they went out there, picked them up, and took it to the cooler. They had their trucks would be loaded in the morning, then they could deliver the milk. They didn't even have to warehouse it sometimes. And so Matanuska was down there, and in all this time, you know, this was about 1958 when I went to work there. Then in 1959, I got fired. I got fired. I smiled when the boss came in with two black eyes.
Where were you working then?
I worked at the university till then.
Oh, okay.
In 1958.
All right.
And Hal Hume was working out at Matanuska Creamery, and he was going to go to college, and there was an opening down there, so I went down and I applied, and I got the job. Well, during the course of the summer, the manager quit and went to work for the city. Dar Heine was the manager down there, and he went to work for the city because he was a chemist by going to school at Michigan or University of Michigan or whatever, and the city needed somebody at the water treatment plant, and also he did the tests on the coal, how many BTU the coal had. So that job at the creamery was only an interim job for him.
Right.
Well, then the farmers, the co-op, sent up one of the sons from the board of directors down there to be the interim manager. Well, he was a really good pure pack operator, but he wasn't a manager. And I went to all the trouble to make the inventory up for him, and then he just arbitrarily ordered whatever he felt like. And so I always had the opportunity to change about 50 cases of milk out of that little dinky cooler, put the new in. They got milk three times a week. And every day, every time we got milk in, I'd have to take these out, put them on a cart, put the new in, and set these other ones on top. Stack them in there. We'd back and forth in there. And we had cardboard boxes at that time. So we had to lay plywood on the boxes on each layer so that they didn't mash down. And the waxy cartons leaked half the time. And then if they leaked, we'd put it back into the milk and repasteurize it, because you couldn't sell a leaker, and it was too much money. So that was kind of what happened. Then Tom, going over this.
What about, did you know this Dr. Fitz?
I only met him one time when we went over there. I went over to Bert Stemple's place, and I met Dr. Fitz. What they did is Dr. Fitz was a missionary in China,
right.
I believe.
Yeah,
I'm not positive.
That agrees with the stories we've heard from two other people.
And he was a real good non-alcoholic person. And Bert Stemple was full of it all the time. So one time, Dr. Fitz had some potatoes, and so he agreed to get somebody over to help dig them or whatever. And Bert Stemple and somebody else, they went over and they got about a couple hundred beer cans and they buried them in the row. And when they started digging the potatoes, here come the beer cans out of the thing, you know. And everybody's over watching this demonstration of this new potato digger. And Dr. Fitz didn't drink anything. But they did, you know, they did that kind of stuff.
Oh, yes.
And then Bert Stemple in Burtsfield, you know, they went into one of his rows, you know, and he was going to show how much he got. Well, they had roped out all the potatoes that they could reach, and they had very carefully mounted the dirt again, you know, just kind of like, and fortunately it drizzled a little bit so that it looked as though it was that way. Started digging, there's not a potato for the first 40 or 50 feet. They had roped them all out of there. So,
and who was responsible for this?
I think that was the Mad Russians.
Zazula?
Zazula. Because Bert Stemple, she worked over there and grated potatoes for Stemple. Mm-hmm. Bob, up on Estro Road. Gamble,
right.
Corey Gamble helped too. Mm-hmm. And they rigged up a bucket of water and when they went in, the Bert's paint root cellar, they water dumped on their head when they went in. So they said it wasn't for them. It was in case somebody broke in and stole potatoes. And I think Zazula and I'm not sure who got wet. But as long as they had it set up, so they got back at Bert and they did it to Bert too. But it took a little while till they. And so I think on that Bert thing, I think Zazula was in on digging the potatoes out. So, and then the Bernie Rainier was he had that
little amusement
thing back in there. And then over here
Carl Wilson that was later on the owner out at the Springs.
I believe it was, but you know that wasn't, and then that's where the Wycliffe. No, they're on this side.
Yeah, that'd be up where the school is now, more or less, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I think that was that hill part there.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time, I think that reverted back because Loud's got a permit to dig rock out of that hill one time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Loud's went up there and dug some rock out of the side of the hill up there. There was, you know, see how the outcropping of rocks are? I don't know exactly that. I didn't have any reason to know what was going on there. And
incidentally, when did the road from the gun site continue on over to here? So that we understood that the military built it over to the gun site. Only it would have been in here. I don't know exactly.
Well, the thing that they used to have a problem with. It was over here by Farkas's place, that creek through here. There was a couple times during the summer that wasn't open, and they finally got enough. I think it went from the Bureau of Public Roads. They used to call it the Bureau of Plural Ruts or something. But anyway, they finally made it so they could go through. But I remember Maddie saying how they would have to go all the way over and then come back on the Bennett Road.
Well, now, when did Bennett go in? Because I assume this must be what was in the now Bennett pretty much, wouldn't you think? See, here's Steelkirk.
Well.
And here's Bennett's property, as a matter of fact.
Well, you know, I think when... when Fabian went in, I think they made that straight in there.
Well,
I think that's when that happened, and because it's a straight stretch there for a ways, and I don't know.
where would Loud's? Here's Farkas. Oh, okay, here's Les Loud, right here.
Yeah, Loud had
Bennett. And that now comes out, doesn't it?
What?
Bennett Road comes out there by Loud's, doesn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
It could have moved over here.
I don't know exactly. See, the I just knew that old Bennett was up there, and I went up there one time, and he was about a grumpy old turkey, and he paid, he didn't pay very much because Ann and somebody went and picked potatoes for him one time, and they didn't go back. They didn't go back. And then Carrington owned a bunch of land at one time. They owned up there on the steeps there by the where Viewcrest.
Yeah,
Campos and I don't know, Mitchell, and I don't know, some of those gem company people got involved in some of this ground in there. And I don't know, that I'm not real familiar with. And the only other one that people I knew was when I went out on Farmer's Loop there, Creamers owned a bunch of ground up. And they had other, you know, a lot of people homesteaded, and they bought out other people's property, at, you know.
Well, what about Kosolik's? Now, they don't show on here, but they must have been.
Kosolik owned, his went up, his actually went up the hill here, and he also had, some down in this, down in the swamp there, too.
Now, to the west.
Well, it's
you know where the old the Rainier's picnic.
Yeah.
Then there was the creek. The creek
bottom. Okay. Yeah.
And right across from the creek, then was where Ed Kosolik stuff.
But he also owned some on the opposite side of the road, because the east was. Steve's kind of went through his property at an oddball place.
It had some real bad permafrost in it.
Yeah, well, that Brewster got a piece of property from him, and he built a house down there, and then he went in there and he dug it all out, and he piled in rocks and stuff to no end, and then he built a nice concrete basement in there, and all of a sudden it started sinking away. Well, then he went down and he filled it all up with gravel, and just said, "Well, you know, I'm going to fill it up," and then he's going to build on. And I worked with the guy. He bought that place. Brewster was a finance or something with the Air Force, and he said he was selling that because he was transferring somewhere. And I told, who bought the thing. And I said, "Boy, I'd be careful." He said, "But he gave me such a good deal on this thing. $82 a month and just take over payments, you know." And he finally abandoned it. Oh. I can picture him. He worked for the railroad for a long time, and then he went to work for. He was over at Nita's one day, and he said, "That Consolidated Freightways don't show me much." He said the railroad moves all this freight, you know. And then he looked at one of the guy's checks, and he says, "Consolidated shows me a lot." And as far as
Kosolik tried to sell me that property of his when he was
going to go outside.
Right. Yeah. I decided I didn't want to get involved in swamps.
Well, you know, the people who bought it, that Annie Bird and Dickie Bird.
Right.
They where his house is, you know, that's all decent, and then up the hill there, but they went down in the swamp there. They were down in the swamp there one time, and he was clearing some of that land, you know, where the Chena Hot Spring Road goes now.
Right.
He had cleared a bunch of land down in there, And they were in there in the springtime, and they were burning that. And they drove in there one time, and there was a thermal karst in there big enough almost to put all the brush in one thermal karst.
Yeah, right.
That thawed out in there. And when they were pushing it along, all of a sudden the snow came out of the ground like this. That hole was 15 or 18 foot deep in there. But remember when they put the road in there the first time, all it went away?
Right.
It went right down.
My gosh, that hasn't been happening, has it?
Well, it hasn't since, but you know, evidently they filled it up enough that it hasn't melted.
Yeah.
So, and as far as...
Something else I wanted to ask about. Oh, do you know how Kivlin spelled their name? That doesn't look like the way I remembered it.
I really don't know. I just knew that's what they called them, and I... And see, and down in here, Laud used to try to get some peat moss out of this area here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, this one here, I don't know who.
They didn't hang around too long, apparently.
Yeah, well, see, a lot of these people, they filed on it, and then they found out that it was kind of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could go out there and, well, see, here's one of the stroker arrangements
right.
here.
Mm-hmm.
And Ernie Gilbert had, I believe he had, his barn was across the road from there.
Yeah.
One, you know, that little old barn there?
What E, W, and M?
I don't know, what E, W?
That would be up where Chuck Belke is now. It all says E, comma, W, comma, M. Oh, no, and M. Does that mean anything to you?
I haven't got a clue.
Mm-hmm.
Where Belke got was that piece from the FCC, Federal Communications, had their antennas.
Yeah, there. Well, this is a whole, almost all of a
section. There.
I would include
that for the university, and the people in Seattle wouldn't
go for it.
Mm.
Yep.
Well, and when you think about the Bentley property, there was a lot of that, and I well, and then the Matanuska Creamery, they bought out the farmers' co-op after a while, that building.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason they bought out that building was because they were going to bring their potatoes up from Palmer and sell them.